Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The everyone's grooving them rhythm and blues that Sam. It's gonna get you some in the air.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Southern Teague. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
I missed a show last week, but I called in.
I know.
It sounded like you had fun.
We had a good time. Matt Freelander, we played
some guitars. You guys sounded pretty good.
Really?
The harmony was great.
Oh, thanks.
It really was.
We just started playing our guitars really soft at one point. We're just like, we're going to fuck this up. It's right at the end. No, it was a great show. It was a lot of fun. Where were you? You were shooting your CNN.
Piece. Yeah, that little news network.
CNN.
We had an interview for the new Barku on CNN, which was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, because I dropped by after the show, and you were wearing a grown-up outfit.
Yeah, yeah. I look like a guy who owns a bar in New York. Yeah, it's great. We're getting so much exposure for the new bar. We're donating a ton of money to charity. 100% of our profits from all the drinks go to charity. And it's we just keep getting picked up by all kinds of news outlets. So
that's great.
Totally stoked.
I hate to say that was my first time there. But, man, I went in, and I don't think it was just because CNN was there. But, man, it was right at opening time. You guys were slamming.
Every single day there's at least handful of 15, 20 people waiting at the door when we open. And then we fill right up. I think it's because of our location. 5 o'clock is the right time for that area. You know,
sure.
You got NYU and Cooper Union and a lot of office buildings. So lots of professionals and students nearby that roll over right at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, and everyone looked really happy. Like they were just happy to be there, having a good time. It's a great room.
I think people feel good doing the thing they were already going to do.
Yeah,
which is probably maybe something they quote unquote shouldn't do. Have a drink. And then they're doing it, and some of the money is going to good causes. So yeah, everybody's happy in there.
Hey man, if you're being charitable by going and having some nice cocktails, then let's go out every night.
Drink with a conscience until you're unconscious.
Yeah. That's
anyway, we got some great guests in the room today.
Yeah, we sure do.
One guy, is this your third round?
This is my third time on Heritage.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we got Austin Henley and Julie Renee Williams joining us all the way from Costa Rica, the Hotel Bel Mar.
Well, we're here now.
Here now, but you just got here less than a week ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you guys have been down there. It was a contract job, right? So 6 months?
Yeah, 5 months.
Oh, 5 months.
A contract there, yeah.
Nice. Five, that's weird. It seems like it'd be half a year or not.
You know what?
The dry season.
It's metric.
Yeah.
We're never.
So it's a metric contract.
It always weirds me out when people order like 5 or 10 oysters. I'm like, no, it's like a half dozen or a dozen. It's
right.
Like months.
Yeah, exactly. So 5 months you were down there, and you were we talked before we went on it. We had lunch at Roberto's as we always do. Delicious
Absolutely.
Pizza.
It must You're have welcome. Been amazing for you guys because
we've been looking forward to it for a while. Yeah. This is actually the only reason we did the show was to have an excuse to have lunch at Burton's.
You're not the first to say that. But you guys were down there eating a suddenly pretty limited diet, right? You were talking that while we were at lunch.
Yeah.
Lots of rice and beans.
It's called gallo pinto, which is like kind of like a beak of a bird. Kind of like pico de gallo, which you can't really explain, but it's just rice and beans, and that's pretty much the way it goes.
Yeah, so we lived in one room while we were... So to backtrack slightly, we were consulting on a bar and a hotel. In Monteverde, Costa Rica, which is in a cloud forest. So think about...
Cloud forest.
So think San Francisco in the jungle,
mm-hmm.
Weather-wise.
Right.
Right. So we were doing a bar program at a carbon-neutral, sustainable hotel.
Nice.
Yeah. And so now to go back to the food situation, we were living in one room on the property of the hotel. So we had a hot plate. And so we became very well versed in many different kinds of grilled cheese variations. so, grilled cheese.
That's just like suddenly you're back like dorm living.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
One hot plate and an iron.
Yeah, and hope. Yeah. Yeah. So grilled cheeses, quesadillas, which is, you know, like,
and the cheese was local too. You said,
yeah, absolutely.
I don't
yeah.
think of that part of the world as a cheese making.
Yeah, the Quakers settled there in 1945 about, and so it's a very bilingual community. There's lots of international schools there. They provide a beautiful education. So all the kids are really well rounded. Really small town, but all of the pathways that we drive through were all like for dairy farms. So they're all cow passages. But the salt and the cheese. I mean, there was no salt in the cheese, and there was no salt in the butter, so we were just making pretty much, like, salty quesadillas and grilled cheeses all the time, but, yeah.
So, speaking of the bilingual aspect, it was a really horrible place for me to go to improve my Spanish.
So, like, you could rely on people speaking English, do you?
Yeah, so as soon as it would become difficult, me speaking Spanish to someone, they would immediately switch to English. Mm-hmm. But I did try very hard. My comprehension got better, but I think my English just got worse.
It's a two-way street. One gets better, one gets worse. So talk to me more about this sustainable aspect of the place, because I feel like, is that a thing that they've tried to enact, or is that a thing that's just like, that's how we've always done it here?
Well,
so that's
kind of naturally, yeah, through exactly. Costa Rica, they try to use all the products that are within the country. Mm-hmm. They have really high import taxes for that reason, because they just want to work from within.
High, by the way, is 100%, right?
Yeah, 100% import tax on alcohol. Not on everything, on alcohol specifically. And just, yeah, to give you a ballpark on how hard the government of Costa Rica is trying to improve the environment, especially within the country. They have 25% of the entire country is designated as like national reserves.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. They're the only country in Latin America that has involved in reforestation. And 90% of their energy comes from natural sources, and they don't have an army. They had a female president, so they're, and they have the highest education rate also in Latin America. So they're a big front runner.
Super progressive, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm-hmm. They're a small country.
So let's talk about how this sustainable hotel and bar and restaurant, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Restaurant.
Let's talk about how did that work as you guys work in the bar? What did that mean for you two behind the bar? Because Austin, let's give some full disclosure. Austin used to work with me at Amore Margo, where everything we use comes out of a bottle, which, when you stack it up, something like this sounds terrible.
Yeah, so it's the exact opposite.
Right.
So, well,
so how did that impact you? How did that impact your workflow, your designing of menus, et cetera? Like, let's talk about that.
When we decided to create this menu so the hotel is carbon neutral, and they had not previously been running a bar program that was sustainably minded. And when we say sustainable, I don't mean 100% sustainable, but we weren't producing our own spirits. We were producing our own beer at a brewery.
The sixth brewery in Costa Rica.
Yeah, was on the property of the hotel. We definitely incorporated that into the menu. But everything except the alcohol, the actual spirits in the bottle, we were either harvesting from the property of the hotel or repurposing from something that would otherwise have been waste from the kitchen.
Nice. Can you give me some examples?
Yeah, so we, you know, you're juicing fruit all day long, and we didn't really have access to triple sec and lots of bottles, so we didn't have any modifiers, so we had to create our own modifiers. So we would take this limon mandarina. It's like a mandarin lime, so it's kind of like it's a really tart orange.
Limon
mandarina. So no lemons, no lime, so that really affected a lot of our recipes.
Yeah, it's a green skin citrus that's bright orange on the inside.
So, like, you get these beautiful bright orange daiquiris and margaritas that are already sweetened, and you don't have to add very much to it. But we didn't have a lot of access, so we decided to make a cordial from the rinds of the every single time after we would juice the citrus, we would use the rinds and make a cordial. And it was really easy because we had a little espresso machine, so we would heat up the peels overnight with some raw cane sugar from our farm, which also produces eggs and milk. And everything was sourced as locally as we possibly could. We wanted to use everything from within the hotel to be self-sufficient as well as sustainable. Because if you're constantly buying, we would look in the trash. What are we throwing away? We're throwing away all these like tins of coconut and Coca-Cola. And we're like, we don't need any of these things. Tea bags. Why do we need tea bags when we have a garden that's next door?
So then pulling back on all those elements that we found, mm-hmm. like, okay, so what are we throwing away? How can we either not throw that away and use it, or just replace it entirely?
Right. So you were telling me over lunch you did a you just mentioned that you'd see in the garbage a bunch of Coca-Cola bottles or whatever. So you started making kind of your own cola.
Yeah, we made our own cola.
Based on some of these things, right?
We used a stout reduction. We threw a little bit
from the brewery.
From the brewery. We reduced the stout with baking spices and a little bit of red wine, some Fernet, some coffee to give you some caffeine. And we tried to make a non-alcoholic version, but it was really hard to boil the alcohol off the beer without making it too toasted. The kids didn't like that toasty element. It turned out that it was much better with a little bit of alcohol in it. And then also using carbonator caps.
Most things are.
Carbonating everything ourselves instead of having like your Fanta, like orange sodas. We made our own like mandarin lime sodas. And
yeah, so remember how we do at Booker and Dax with this
absolutely
with the soda. We realized as we had stripped away stripped away almost every element that we could, we still had these crates and crates of soda water bottles,
right?
So we just had someone that was coming into the country bringing a bunch of carbonator caps, and we already had this CO2 for the beer taps that we had. Mm-hmm. So
you force carbonated.
So we just
force
carbonated the water, and that reduced the amount of glass bottle recycling, you know, by so much.
And the recycling facilities there were amazing. They had a box for every single color, if it was broken, if it was labeled, unlabeled, or if it was a full bottle. And our recycling facilities, I've never seen anything cleaner. No animals, no bugs, no flies, everything was washed. Like, they were very, very like eco-minded on the way that
but
we
then,
dealt
about
with our
that,
trash.
At that point, we're on the top of this crazy mountain that doesn't even have paved roads to get up to it. So the idea of taking the new bottles all the way up to us and then taking the recycled bottles all the way back down again to San Jose, which is 3 hours away, like if we could eliminate that aspect, then we could get closer to being fully sustainable.
What was the how'd the clientele feel about all this? Like, you were in this somewhat paradise of a place that was hard to get to, so people had to make an effort to get there. And you told me during lunch they came there because it was the number one bird watching spot.
Yeah,
in the
number
world.
One bird watching. We have the resplendent Quetzal and this like huge Morphos butterfly.
The resplendent Quetzal.
Yeah, revered in Mayan culture. This huge rainbow bird. I saw a few of them. It was
and
the season.
Toucans, macaws.
Toucans, yeah, lots of things.
There was this bird in the cloud forest that sounded like a swinging rusty gate.
Right.
So like the hinges of a rusty gate.
It was a nightingale, was I found one. Out. This like really small blackbird made like the largest, like most unique noise to it. But
rusty wind chimes.
So there was a lot of older clientele. So they would come in, you know, a lot of British people like, I'd like a gin and tonic. And we're like, well, we don't have tonic, but I made our own house-made tonic with amaranth and tarragon, which was
grown on the farm.
Delicious.
I'm loving all this. This is crazy.
Yeah. So
not even on the farm. Like, we had a little greenhouse.
We had a huerta, like a, a garden.
So there were two aspects. There was a farm that was about 20 minutes away, which we got eggs and milk and things like that from, butter.
Meat, coffee.
Yeah, we grew our own coffee as well. And then the greenhouse is where we grew.
It's amazing.
Right? I know. It's a really beautiful concept.
It's like where we came from. You know, like we don't do that anymore.
Meanwhile, you've got like how many bitters do you not only stock but sell at Mori Mario?
Right, and it's 250 or more. And they come from all over the world in bottles that get traveled and carbon footprint is all crazy and all that stuff. What about bitters?
Well,
eyes lit up when you said bitters.
Yeah, there's this bitter. What was it called? Like lagrimas del something about the tears. They have like this bitter tears plant.
Hombre grande.
They have these
big guy.
The bitter tears of the big man.
Yeah, and it's a really
that's like when you got hit by that car.
Dig up the roots and make a bitters out of it.
When the car got hit by me.
Hashtag unkillable.
Unkillable. So let's back up. So yeah, they'd come and they'd say, "I want a gin tonic," and you'd say, "Well, I got this tonic that I make, and I've certainly got gin."
Yeah,
get on board.
Which is beautiful because then there's no gin in it, and I use just the littlest amount of sugar, the littlest amount of citrus, and this amaranth tarragon makes this beautiful, like rosy magenta colored drink. Like garnish it
with
tarragon,
this ombre grande for the bitterness.
And people are like, "Whoa, this is absolutely delicious, and it's really beautiful." And then we could offer them that alcoholic or non-alcoholic, so you can have a tarragon amaranth tarragon tonic or an amaranth tarragon gin tonic, which is really cool.
And the people that are coming to this hotel were already so far out of their comfort zone
That it wasn't hard to push them a little further,
that
right?
Just mm-hmm. the fact that someone speaking in American accented English said, "Would you like to try this?" They were like, "Yeah." Okay.
Sure. Yeah, whatever.
So there was very little resistance to it, but we were also not bringing people too far out of what they were going to expect.
That's cool. You were saying before the show there were times where you would have the hotel full of it'd be like all British people over the age of 70.
Yeah,
that's what we were just talking about. So the reason that we created this gin and tonic situation was because we had everyone asking
before
for
the
gin
show
and tonics.
You were talking about the Cosmo.
Oh, the Cosmo. We had a lot of
yeah, the Cosmo.
There were a lot of old British
Cosmopolitan, right?
There were a lot of old British women asking for Cosmopolitans, but we didn't have cranberries.
Yeah,
cranberries do not grow
in the clouds.
in Central America, and they actually.
They think that cranberries are called arándanos, but they think that arándanos and cerezas, which are cherries, are the same thing. So if you order like an arándanos ice cream, it's totally cherries. And I'm like, these are cherries. They're like, no, they're not. Oh, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, these are cranberries. They're cherries. And nobody understands the difference, but they don't grow at all. So we can't make Cosmos.
But we had a whole bunch of people who, I think it was this group of like seven women who were very adamant about winning Cosmopolitan. So... You know, we had like a little huddle for a second. We're like, well, what do we do about this? What about cranberry juice?
Make it pink.
Yeah. So, what about cranberries? Okay, make Cosmopolitan. Well, it makes it pink. That's one thing for sure. They wouldn't have been happy if it wasn't pink.
Right.
And cranberries contribute like a tannic quality, like that kind
Absolutely.
Of grip to it.
Tannic, tart, bitter.
Yeah, so and bitter tart. And some bitterness mm-hmm. to it. So what do we do? So we have these beautiful hibiscus plants, right? That's right.
But they're a little different. They're not like the Hawaiian hibiscus with the six leaves. They're called Rosa Jamaica. So they're these really like full, bright pink, but they're still totally hibiscus. So as they were dying on the plant, or we would use them for garnishes in the kitchen, then we would repurpose the hibiscus.
Yeah, so we'd make like a tea basically with guaro cacique, which we'll explain in a second, which is kind of like Costa Rican vodka. We would steep it in that, so it would give it that kind of tannic quality. And we'd use the bitterness from the limon mandarin cordial that we just talked about, because it has lots of bitterness from the oil, from the peels. And then, so the guaro cacique, and just like the tiniest bit of Cointreau, because you need that, and then the limon mandarin, and it makes something that, you know, definitely tastes like a Cosmopolitan, but doesn't have cranberries come anywhere near it.
That's and amazing. We would garnish it with a nasturtium flower, which was so beautiful because we had like fresh flowers in the garden that were edible. And
it also turns out that everything that we grew there on the property would just turn everything pink.
That's so true.
So we had a very small spectrum of colors for the drink.
All of our drinks were pink.
It was from very, very pale pink to dark purple, and that was the range.
You did a whole pink menu, didn't you?
Last spring at
the Grand Army.
Oh, it's perfect.
She beat me to it, man.
Barbie's Malibu Mansion. That was my favorite pink drink.
I just think it's amazing, man. It's kind of like guerrilla bartending, and just like using whatever is like within arm's reach.
It's like chopped for bartending, like 5 months long.
Sure, I mean, like something we said earlier. It's like, well, how do we? It's like all sheer force of will.
Yeah, we're like, let's use ginger in this. Yeah. Wait, we don't grow ginger. Let's use coconut. Oh, we buy coconut. So we would have all these creative ideas of things we wanted to do. We're like, yeah, but we're not.
There were things that we could have bought, but we just decided as a first principle to just. Let's just go with what we have.
Man, how many times have I
And we make like fresh that to people? Fresh smoothies. Yeah. So they would be like chopping up fruit. So we would always have the cascaras, like the peels, especially pineapple. So if you cut up one pineapple and you just use the peels, we'll scrub the shit out of it first of all, because when you didn't scrub it, that really frustrated me because all the flies would come. So scrub the peels and then put the hearts in the peels, and we put it in a, what do you call those? The champagne buckets?
Bain-Marie.
And then we would use a large tin of Bain-Marie. We'd use a large tin of the sugar from the farm and put it in there. I would cover it in plastic and put it on top of the espresso machine overnight. I would come back in and it would yield 35 ounces with adding no liquid to it whatsoever, just the pineapple peels and the sugar. Wow. Would make this gorgeous pineapple cordial. Like, it was pineapple syrup. It was so good. We would put a little salt in it, and it was...
Of course you did.
Salt preserves it and then like brings out the flavor, and all of our coworkers are like, we're not going to put salt in it. And I'm like, just one pinch. And then they're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah. Just pinch.
Okay, so just since we're on the topic, pinch is pellizco.
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 Yeah. Ah, so see, we had learned Spanish.
Pellizco.
We had a drink on the menu
called the pellizco. Pellizco sour. Like a little pinch.
A little pinch. All right, team. We're stretching a little, but let's stop and do a quick mid-show break, and then we're going to come back and talk more about Hotel Del Mar, Costa Rica, Cacique. Gorilla bartending? Were there actual gorillas? I don't know.
No,
stay tuned.
There were definitely howler monkeys and scorpions.
Oh, that's scorpion stories. Yeah. Damon's got a scorpion tattoo.
All
right, Victor, take us out. We're going to come back right after this and talk more about Costa Rica.
Heritage Foods USA is a farm-to-table online butcher and founding sponsor of Heritage Radio Network.
Patrick Martins founded Heritage Foods USA in 2002 to save endangered species of livestock from extinction. He learned about the plight of endangered foods while working for Slow Food, a nonprofit started in 1986 in Italy when the first McDonald's opened on the Spanish steppes of Rome. To counter the homogenizing effects of fast food, Slow Food was formed to bring attention to regional cuisines and ingredients.
By 2000, Patrick was the president of Slow Foods USA and working on adding heritage breeds to their arc of taste, but he decided to go further than a metaphorical arc and actually do something to preserve rare breeds.
That was the moment that Heritage Foods slogan, "Eat 'em to save 'em," was born. By creating a market for delicious meats from heritage breeds, we can ensure they'll be around for generations to come.
Plus, heritage breeds just taste a whole lot better. Learn more at heritagefoodsusa.com and use the code HERITAGERADIO for 2 free pork chops with your first order, brother.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Hey, we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. Today, we are in the studio with Julia Renee Williams and Austin Henley. We've been talking with them about their recent adventures in Costa Rica and the sustainable hotel, bar, restaurant that they were working at. Man, it's just incredible. I think it's amazing. I mean, I grew up on a farm, so it made me think about, we farmed all of our grains and, we had a giant garden where we grew everything, raised cattle and pigs and chickens and stuff like that. So everything was kind of just right there.
Yeah, just nature's just right there. But
it's right there. You forget about it. Especially when you're living in
New York City. And then that's great because everything's just right there in front of you. But the flip side of that is nature is also just right there in front of you all the time. So we had a balcony that was always open, this beautiful view. You could see the Nicoya Peninsula, and you could see the Pacific Ocean even from where we were up on this mountain, about 1,800 meters.
Right, and you said when you're up that high, the oxygen is so thin that your line of vision is much further, right? So you're up there and you can see further.
Yeah, you can see further, and it's really beautiful. Crazy. And the mosquitoes don't come up that high, which is really beautiful.
Nice.
You have this, the bounty of the earth, but then you also have all the other things about the earth that are also right there. So if you have a dining room that's open to the outside in the middle of a jungle, sometimes you have some unwanted critters that wander in. So we had this guy who was celebrating a birthday. This
must have been about 250. This guy was huge. He was a Scottish boxer.
This Scottish MMA fighter.
Accent.
And he was having his birthday. He got this cake and had these squares of hard chocolate on top of the cake.
Oh, right. You mentioned there's a lot of chocolate makers there, right?
Yeah. Chocolate and coffee.
And cacao as well. Mm-hmm. And that was also from the farm.
Cool.
So this guy finishes his meal and he's standing up and he looks down on the ground and bends over and he sees what he later described to me as one of the pieces
chunk
of
chocolate.
So he goes to grab it to eat the last piece of his birthday cake and off the floor. Yeah, he goes to grab it off the floor.
Disgusting. I would never do such a thing.
Do anything like that.
But it was a scorpion.
Did he eat a scorpion?
So no, he took it and like was about to put it into his mouth, and I mean, scorpion did what any of us would do: just bit the guy in the hand,
stung him.
Yeah,
stung him.
Or did
stung
he bite him?
Did he bite him?
Well, I mean, the guy was about to bite it. I mean, like, just kind of like,
right? No. I totally side with the scorpion in this situation.
Yeah,
no, I mean, the guy was about to eat the chocolate off the floor.
And it was a small scorpion. Yeah. Like, that's your sticking
point. Right.
That's your sticking point, that he was going to eat the chocolate off the floor. He wasn't going to waste it. You guys were going through the garbage.
This guy's an MMA fighter. He can deal with it.
He can hold his own.
But it didn't look like the tattoo on your arm. These scorpions are much smaller. They look little tanks. They were super compact. They look like they had armor.
Those are the scarier ones, man. Like, the smaller they are, the more poisonous they are.
Well, typically. I thought that too, but she explained
that in the jungle, because they have so much sustenance, then they're not as poisonous as they are in the desert, where, say, it's more difficult for them to find food. So these scorpions are a little bit more friendly.
Yeah, they don't.
They don't really
mess with you. I had to take a couple of them out of our room a couple of times. They're not really too keen on messing with you because they've got plenty.
Because they're living in paradise.
Yeah, but then when some giant tries to eat it, then that's when it goes wrong.
Yeah, they react.
So, well, that's fantastic.
You mentioned cacique earlier,
mm-hmm.
and frankly, when you mentioned it at lunch, I don't know this beard at all. What is this juice?
So it's called guaro. Guaro is like an old, I think it's a Mexican term, but I'm not sure. Anyway, so it's called guaro de cacique, and they distill it. The government distills it, so it is a sugarcane spirit.
The government cheese of Costa Rica.
Yeah.
There's no distillation allowed in Costa Rica except for the distillation controlled by the government.
Wow.
And that is Guaro Cacique and Centenario rum.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So we pretty much wanted to put those into everything because they were so cheap and government funded, and it goes back to the country. But it's filtered like a vodka, plays like a vodka, mixes like a vodka. So we use that in our version of a Bloody Mary, which is called a chili guaro. So say you were to walk into a bar, the very first thing you would get would be this like spicy tomato mixture of cacique, and you take a shot of it. So we made like this huge chili guaro gigante with tomato and Panamanian chili, which is the best chili in the world. And cacique, all the guests were like, "What is cacique?" We just say it's the national spirit, because saying it tastes like a rum but is made like a or tastes like a vodka but is made like a rum, people get really confused about it and about the presentation of it. Like, you guys would understand how that would mix.
It's sugarcane vodka, essentially.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Gotcha. Sí, claro.
Sí, claro.
Cacique.
Yeah, but because it's made by the government, and it's incredibly inexpensive.
All right, well, it's usurping that 100% tax.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, yeah. Man.
I mean, I was supposed to go to Costa Rica, like, years ago on a vacation, and my girlfriend at the time let her passport lapse, and we got stuck.
Ooh.
Not going. But one of the main things I know about Costa Rica is, like, two things, surfing and coffee. Mm-hmm. So did the coffee play a lot into, I mean, we talked about the Coca-Cola kind of like the cola thing that mm-hmm. you were doing with the, stout reduction.
I mean, coffee played a huge part in the hotel. It was grown on the farm. The farm was called Madre Tierra. It's Mother Earth. Coffee was complimentary to all the guests.
Like everything.
At any time of the day, you could just call for coffee and get coffee. And just espresso. So you could have Americanos, cappuccinos, espressos, things like that.
Yeah, and Austin made a coffee cocktail, Salud, Dinero y Amor. They're like three blessings that you give. And would have like three coffee beans, like a Sambuca, with like a Negroni variation with some coffee syrup.
With the coffee from the farm. And then you can get absinthe. I want to put some absinthe in there. So I use Sambuca.
Or we use Palo Santo mist too, because like, since we don't have modifiers, we would try to find something that would like come up with the same way, so we'd use
Palo Santo mist.
Oh, that's
you were saying that before the show, you were talking about how, like, I mean, I was also at the beginning of the show, you were talking about how like there's like 100% government tax on imported mm-hmm. spirits. So you talked about having Cointreau at the bar
mm-hmm.
for the cosmopolitan version.
Yeah.
What were some of the other ones that you actually stocked in the bar?
Yeah, what were
the spirits that were worth bringing in at that price?
Yeah, exactly. The modifiers, like, we had Averna.
Really?
We had Averna, we had Aperol Campari, but a lot Aperol of things Campari were bottles that I brought or friends brought that we put on the back bar. But
I'd be pretty comfortable there.
Yeah. But then if that so bottle far. Was gone, it's like we have no idea when we would ever get the next shipment right. coming up that mountain. Or
and as far
right,
as
you
as
can't
as
put these things on menu.
Unless it's a quarter ounce. Then we could put it on the menu.
Yeah. But even then, someone sees affordable. It on the menu and they're like, fuck that quarter ounce, I want a shot of Fernet.
But also, they make their drinks really short later, there. Out. Like, they only pour an ounce and a half and everything because I don't want everybody to get
yeah,
really
even,
drunk.
Yeah, even
so
our alcoholic
we had to change
drinks.
All of our specs down to an ounce. Like, I had a martini that only had an ounce of alcohol in it, and we just made everything really light in booze. And we actually also, so we made 10 alcoholic drinks and 10 non-alcoholic drinks. So we had this whole dry seasons offering, which was really great because there were so many people that didn't drink and children and pregnant women. And also there's so many people in the hotel don't want to drink all day long. So that upped the check averages. And we also got to diversify our menu in the sense where we could use all the same elements in each drink and give you the same presentation. So you could get a martini or something that looked like a glass of champagne with these beautiful local flowers in it. And it was really cool. successful. People really, 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 yeah.
Very cool.
Now, how do they, so I happen to know that just before you, or maybe not immediately before you, but before you, Amanda Witt, who also worked at Maury Margo, she went down and manned that bar for the 5-month contract, I guess. So how do they continue? How does it continue? Like, do the next people come in and are they going to be as conservative as you guys were? Are they going to make as much stuff as you made?
Well, it's
was that being done before you got there? It sounds like you sort of initiated all this.
Yeah,
well,
we initiated
our friend
the sustainable.
Liz Furlong, she started it. She's Canadian. And so she made the cocktail menu because she went to college with one of the owners, Pedro Belmar, in Montreal. So then she came down there. She made the first cocktail program. But Amanda made a lot of bitters. She made a lot of coffee cocktails. She taught the staff a lot of things. I did a
nice
staff
job,
training
Amanda.
There last year. And then Amanda came in and she like, yeah, she really worked. Yeah, nice job, Amanda. She came down and visited. We went to a wedding. Amanda came. It was really good.
Yeah, it was a multi-pronged sort of situation. So Amanda definitely initiated a lot of the education for the staff before we got there, so that by the time we got there, they were much more receptive to what we were going to do. Obviously, what we did was pretty ambitious for people to accept in a country that doesn't really have a cocktail culture to speak of. But definitely Amanda going down there was a big step in the right direction as far as the staff in the hotel and also the locals were concerned. So by the time that we got there, all the locals that lived in Monteverde were very used to being able to go to Hotel Belmar and get and just kind of take it for granted that they could get a really amazing Negroni made by someone that worked at a Maury Margo.
Sure, yeah. You can't unring the education bell.
Yeah.
Like, you teach people that there's something better, and you show it to them, and you give it to them at a reasonable price, then they don't want to go backwards.
Absolutely.
So it's just going to keep spearheading forward. That's cool.
That kind of leads me to my next thought and question. It's like, you guys basically lived in, like, a dorm room. You had when you upgraded to a 2-burner hot plate, you were like really like kicking ass.
We can make sauce and
it's
boil
called
the water
a small kitchen.
Pasta at the same time.
And like you, when the knobs fell off, you used wine keys to.
I love that photo.
Yeah, well, it's, unfortunately, it's a radio, so we can't show you this photo. But yeah,
you should post it on your
worm the part, the screw part of the corkscrew stuck into the holes in the hot plate, and then you use it kind of like.
But only on the plastic part, or you would get electric.
Right.
Well, no one found that out the hard way.
So that just leads me to like, if you could give our listeners. Like an idea of like basically like what is your takeaway from this whole experience and like how do you share how are you planning to utilize what you learned from this like 5-month stage down there and like take that into like the future of what you
and can I add a piece what did you expect and what did you take away and how did that differ
Totally. I mean, my idea was to go down there just to calm down and take a break, take a step back. It wasn't necessarily for something lucrative or financial. And I also got to teach yoga there. So I met every single person in the hotel. I gave them booze and then I gave them spiritual advice. I taught meditation. I spent a lot of time with the Quaker community. There was a huge expat community there. We consulted and helped some other friends who were opening bars and restaurants. But really what we're taking back, I think, is how to be calm and how to breathe within the workspace, because we're always, we have so many expectations as to how we want to be perceived. And I got really wrapped up in New York City, and I was just, I was feeling really dizzy about the instant gratification. So going there really just brought me back to a place of humility. I've left New York 8 times in the past 12 years. So this is my 8th trip abroad.
Wow.
And, but this one was really particularly different because we were working 60 hours a week and constantly immersed in each other's lives. What do you want to say, Austin?
Oh, no, I just was reminding Julie of a very valuable lesson that she learned.
Oh, I'm not chill. I thought that I was chill. Like, I'm like, I'm from California. I surf. I teach yoga.
Whatever
like
made
glitter.
You think that you were chill?
I really did.
You're
I was,
like such
I,
high energy.
I
like,
am, but I thought that I had this aura.
I think
aura,
you just barely are under Kimmy Winkler.
Kimmy.
With energy just boiling out of you.
Exactly. Like bubbling all the time. But I always thought like, yeah, I'm California. I'm super happy and chill. And then I realized when I'm working, when I was like trying to train the staff and not getting the responses that I wanted, like, there were times and I was like, this goes here because of this reason. And like, we clean this after we do this because of this reason. And they wouldn't do it and it would never happen. And I wanted everyone to learn so bad. And I was like getting really frustrated with them. And I was like, oh, maybe if you just calm down. And Austin was a super chill one. He was the one always like taking a breather, taking a step back, putting me in my place in a nice way.
Well, didn't you like hitchhike for an entire year?
That's true. Yeah, I did do that. Yeah, I hitchhiked 20,000 miles around the country.
Jesus Christ.
But this was a very different experience because that was constant motion. And that's almost more similar to being in New York because you're just, okay, like anything that happens, just put it behind you, moving forward. Just keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. You can almost just ignore whatever just happened 5 minutes ago in New York City.
Right.
Because everything changed already.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like you thought you had a good idea? Great. 10 more people just had it.
Right.
Or had it before you, and it's done.
Or
moving
you forgot
on.
It.
What do you got next? What do you got next? What do you got next? So this was kind of like, and especially using, not using, framing the work that we did in like a sustainable, like a, in a sustainable hotel or like a carbon neutral sort of mindset, using the environment around you sense, it gave me a chance to just kind of take a step back and take a broader view of what I wanted to do with the work that we were doing there. Because it didn't
happen. And with ourselves, emotionally and physically and mentally. And like, it allowed us to get really close to each other in such an intimate way because we didn't have so many influences. Sure, we had the internet, but it was a really small community, a really safe, protected community. And we couldn't eat anything past 9:30. Like kitchens were closed and it was really difficult to get in and out just to get groceries and just to live.
Everything had to be planned. Like from when we woke up, we had to plan our entire day or like,
how are we going to eat 3 times? What are we going to eat and where are we going to get it from? And then,
or we had to plan like,
you rice know, and beans,
rice and beans, rice and beans,
rice beans and rice.
So, I mean, like it's like kind of the exact opposite of, in a way, like of living in New York City, because like, this city's 24 hours, man.
Like no matter what happens, we can always get away with it here.
We can go back in reverse right now and get another pizza, you know? Like,
yeah.
Actually, we still have pizza in the studio.
We do.
But, yeah, that's amazing. But
yeah, just having to be more cognizant of the outcome that you want, not in the next 10 minutes, not in the next 10 days, but, like, in the next month, what do we want to happen?
Yeah.
And then, you know, not being so myopic.
How did that differ from what was your expectation going down there? So that's what the reality was. That's what you got. But what did you expect getting on the plane headed to Costa Rica?
Yeah, I didn't expect the amount of isolation. Really, like I didn't. It's from where we were. It was a 5-6 hour bus ride to the nearest metropolitan area, which was the only metropolitan area in the country, which is San Jose. So you can't just like run out and get a pair of shoes. So let's just stick with the shoes example. Like if I had to get shoes, I had to plan a day off to get on a bus at you know, wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, walk 3 miles down a mountain to a bus station, get on that bus, travel 5 hours, then figure out where to go get shoes in this like crazy bustling metropolis where I don't really speak the language.
Right.
I mean, I can at this point now, after 5 months, my comprehension is pretty good. But the first month or so I was there, I couldn't go out on my own. And that did force me to learn. But, you know, just that the feeling of like, well, I'm here now.
Here I am.
Wow.
And what about you?
I didn't expect that. There was not really a way to expect that.
Yeah.
What about you, Julie? What was your expectation getting off the plane in Costa Rica? Like, what were you thinking?
I had been there the year before, and I'd spent like some months like surfing and chilling in a children's school in Costa Rica. But I honestly, it was like part of my breakup story with New York City. I was here, and I just was realizing everything that I was obsessed with. The long
12-year on-and-off relationship with New York City.
Exactly. And this was like my year breakup. I went to India for 6 months before. I was just like meditating through the Himalayas, trying to keep it simple. And I'm still with the same backpack of clothes since then, which most of it I need to throw away. But my purpose for going there was, again, just to remain calm. Like, to really just like... tighten the screws, figure out like, what are my morals, what are my values, what do I really want? Because in New York I'm so involved in everyone else's story, which is honestly why I'm nervous to come back here, because I get so immersed in everyone else's lives and I'm just like drunk all the time here too. So just like really toning down the booze. I didn't drink for a really long time, and now just like sipping on things and having a good old time and waking up fresh and teaching yoga, practicing. So just being more mindful. I'm ready to be an adult. Look at me, Julie Renee Williams, covered in glitter. Yeah, I'm an adult.
Cutting back on alcohol. I quit smoking.
Yeah.
Well, too, I mean, like you're saying, like with that kind of isolation and stuff, it's like, and without that access to everything like you had before and even now, in New York City, it's like, shit, man. Like, when you taste, like, a nice whiskey, you're like, oh, my God, this is the best thing. Like, I could have a half an ounce of this and be completely satisfied instead of going out all fucking night.
Absolutely. Just half an ounce of this. This is so amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I saw that they had Rothaus pills on the menu there, and I said to him, like, oh, my God. Can I just hold the bottle? Like, that's all.
Right. It's beautiful.
Right. Your appreciation level becomes much more through the roof. Profound.
It's really good to get out and to just find humility again inside yourself. So if anyone's interested in going down there, they're always looking for bartenders in the dry season. So it will be a 5-month contract, maybe something less. And again, like, this is something for you to go and like calm down and be within yourself and find some humility. And it's a really beautiful tropical really challenging experience, but challenge gets you really far. So in hindsight, I'm really grateful.
Is there, do you happen to know a website or any contact information we could share?
Yeah, it's the Hotel Belmar. So you can just contact them directly on Facebook.
Hotel Belmar. 300 meters north of the gas station.
Yes, exactly.
That was the address, Damon, that I had to send. I sent them a care package. Bitters. Well, I was going to send it, actually. Then I got a mule. Amanda Witt was going down there, so I just had to take it. But the address that they sent me was Hotel de Belmar, 300 meters north of the gas station. I was like,
Punta Arenas.
That's the address? It's not an address.
Yeah,
that's directions how to get there.
It's a suggestion.
Yeah. So I was a little scared to send that stuff through the mail. But people can contact Hotel Belmar on Facebook if they're interested in this very challenging.
And they're looking for brewers as well, because they have the brewery there. And they're always looking for people that want to work in hospitality. We also worked in the front desk, and it would definitely be the dry season. So that's the New York City winter. The winter and summers are, even though they're north of the equator, they're kind of flopped there. So it'd be like November to May, like what we just did. So
amazing.
Very cool.
So glad to have you guys back.
Thanks for having us.
Oh yeah, we're not done. We got a couple minutes. But before we go, do want to promote maybe what you're doing now. So you're both here for the next 4 months minimum, because you got a sublet.
Yeah.
And you're going to be working.
We're going to hang out for the summer and work on the roof at Westlight at the William Vale Hotel.
We were going to come here and just visit Austin's parents, go to a wedding, and then head to California and sink in there. But all the job opportunities and things we were looking for in LA were like, all of that can wait. And his old boss, Mara, she offered us a job at Westlight. So we're like, okay, let's kick it in New York for the summer and see if we can make the time worth it.
Yeah. Work a rooftop bar in New York City for the summer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No brainer.
So we stayed.
Nice.
No brainer.
So we're here, so around.
Yeah, so I'll definitely come up and visit you up on the roof, especially while I still can't work myself with my stupid broken arm.
It's a ladder up there, so you might not.
I've got one good arm. All right, I'll talk about the next things that are happening here. Let's see. Today, that's you guys. Next Wednesday, we've got Adrienne Stillman. She lives out in California. She's the author of the book Where Bartenders Drink. It's kind of a compilation style. There was a book that came out before it, and the people who made that book reached out to her. It was called Where Chefs Eat. So a pretty similar concept. She asked bartenders from all over the world to list places that they like to go and drink. I'm in there. Are you in there?
I think I am.
There's a bunch of people in there. Anyway, she's going to be on the show. She's a bubbly personality. She's going to be fun. The following Wednesday, the 31st, looks like we might have my team on the show from Coup. From Coup, damn it. I mispronounce my own thing all the time. From Coup. Might be myself, Robbie DeRossi, and Max Green. As I guess I'll just play guest on that show, and you can be the host again, like in the old good old days. Oh, it's important to mention that next week is my 1-year anniversary on the show.
Indeed. Congratulations.
I didn't know about that. And then the following week, we've got the guy, I can't remember his name.
Henry Jeffries.
There we go. The guy who wrote the book Empire of Booze, which is a fascinating historical account of sort of booze throughout the British Empire and how it affected like the way we look at the map of the world, frankly.
Yeah.
Very cool guy. Lots of cool things to say. All right. And that's the day before your birthday.
It is.
So we might get some drinking on.
Right, most likely. I do want to actually mention that on top of all of the stuff that we're doing here at Speakeasy, this Sunday, May 21st, is the Season 6 finals for Speed Rack.
Oh, that's right. Oh, Jesus, how did I skip that?
Yeah, so please go check it out. Tickets are available on Eventbrite, I believe. And yes, Eventbrite. And it's at the Whalen in New York.
On Broadway in Williamsburg. Broadway. It's like that. It's that bank that they always light up in colors.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes.
Broadway and Driggs.
It became a venue.
I'm really, like, she's, Ivy and the crew, they're good buddies of ours.
Of course.
And Lynette and everyone. And I also want to say congratulations to Ivy and Julie. They just had yesterday was their 2-year anniversary for Leanda. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Wow, congrats.
So big week for that crew.
Big week indeed. Also just a big week for charitable drinking. The whole Speed Rack, now it's global, by the way, the whole Speed Rack Global is a fantastic organization, and they raise a lot of money for breast cancer research, and we're total and staunch supporters of that sort of action. So back the rack.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's it for this week, then.
Man, what a great show.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming in the studio. I'm glad you guys are back. I mean, it seems like time also kills. Time also kills.
but not if you don't kill it first.
Yeah. but it did seem like you guys were gone for a lot longer. I didn't realize it was just 5 months. I thought it was like a year.
Yeah.
Felt like that sometimes. But now it just feels like we time traveled right back here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad you did. And it's good to have you back. We'll come see you up on that rooftop.
Do. Oh, and also, Austin's going to be pulling a few shifts at Amore. So.
Oh, cool. Getting back in the saddle. Huh?
And I'll be teaching yoga somewhere.
Since my wing.
Meditation.
I'll go see Austin.
Since my wing is still busted, he'll be pulling some shifts for me.
I'll go do yoga and you go hang out and drink.
All right.
All right, well, that's it for the show this week. Thanks for listening to The Speakeasy, and check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. Until next week, I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, guys.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.